Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday. It's August 20th. Currently 62 degrees here in Old Town Park City under mostly sunny skies. Heber City reporting 63 degrees. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, we've got meteorologist Cedric Hayes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Yeah, we are starting off with some beautiful weather conditions out there. Of course, we had a few more scattered storms on our Monday evening, but Tuesday is starting off nice with that sunshine and the humidity levels somewhat low right now, so that's good to see as well. We've got temperatures that are going to be climbing into the mid to upper 80s today in Park City, so it's going to be a little bit warmer, a little bit toastier out there with that sunshine and slightly drier conditions. Just a very slim, less than 20% chance of an isolated brief shower. Otherwise, in the Heber Valley, same story, a very slight chance of an isolated shower in the valley areas, but it's not going to be much to write home about there, especially considering the past couple of days, mainly mostly sunny skies. Temperatures will be climbing into the low 90s, though, so that will be something that will be definitely noticeable if you're going to be out recreating throughout the day today. So keep that in mind, and don't forget that sunscreen, SPF 30 or greater, or you could burn in less than 15 minutes. Now, as we go into the rest of the week, we're going to see a few more clouds mixed in with the sunshine, and we are going to start to bring back that chance of a few pop-up storms, especially by Thursday and Friday, as we start to see a little bit more monsoon moisture moving in. That'll keep temperatures for the most part in the 80s for highs in both Park City and in the Heber Valley as we go throughout that time frame. But the big weather story is definitely going to be a upper level low that's going to move in as we go into the weekend. And that is going to bring us more significant changes because we're going to see some much drier air moving in just in time for our Saturday and Sunday. But even better than that, we're talking about some pleasant temperatures moving into the area. We'll call it a little taste of what we like to call fake fall season making its way into the area. We're going to be talking about overnight lows in Park City dropping down into the low to mid 40s in the Heber Valley. I wouldn't be surprised to see a couple of upper 30s as we get towards the weekend mornings, and daytime highs will be climbing only into the 60s to near 70 degrees for high temperatures, especially in the higher elevations as we get towards this weekend. So just a dramatic change in that forecast when it comes to those temperatures and the humidity levels. But the best part about it is the rain chance is basically at 0% during that time as well. So it's not going to be rain cool there. It's just going to be a beautiful weather day for your Saturday and Sunday with those very pleasant temperatures and lots of sunshine. But again, as we go throughout the next couple of days, we will still deal with the heat though. So don't let that fool you. While we have fake fall showing up for the weekend, we are still going to be in the midst of those summer-like temperatures here as we go into the next couple of days. And the good news is the rain chance is not too high over the next few days, but we'll keep an eye on Thursday afternoon and Friday afternoon as some of that monsoon moisture tries to return, giving us a few more pop-ups. But of course, we live for the weekend, and looks like this weekend is going to be great when it comes to the weather, Leslie.
Okay, fake fall. I like that, Cedric.
Yes, That's it. Thanks. Don't be fooled, though.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. In addition to day two of the KPCW Summer Pledge Drive, on the phone now with a preview of the Wasatch County Council meeting happening on Wednesday, I have County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. Good morning, Dustin.
Good morning, Leslie.
First, wanted to get your take on last week's joint meeting to discuss how Wasatch County helps get the 176 Wakara Ridge property owners to their homes once those homes are built. As we know, West 200 South is a road shared by Summit and Wasatch Counties, and the road has served as the primary construction route for the Tuhay development, which has more than 700 homes when it's finally built out. But it's the only road that would allow access to Wakara Ridge, a development that was approved by Wasatch County last spring. I guess the question I have is, how does a development get approved without an approved access?
Well, so part of the context of this is that Wasatch County zoned this area as part of the Mill Basin Overlay Zone more than 20 years ago. And as a land use authority, Wasatch County, we have to abide by the restrictions set on our own land use code. So when Wakara Ridge comes to us and says they want to do a project that complies with that code, that leaves very little discretion to any land use authority, Wasatch County included. So that was one of the points of consideration. The other was that there, to my knowledge, was not any discussion at the time, and it was not on anyone's radar, that the access would change. So that is something that we have considered since then, that Summit County has expressed those concerns. Part of it is that, like you said, Touhé has been using this access for about 20 years as well. And so I think it was maybe an assumption and a lack of coordination between Wasatch County and Summit County on making sure that we were all aware of what the other entity was doing.
Okay, so at the time of approval last spring, it didn't raise any red flags with the Planning Commission or the Planning Department, huh?
No. Like I said, I don't think anyone really considered that this road's access would be a point of discussion.
Yeah, so the solution, though, I mean, is this a Summit Wasatch County problem or is it a Wakara Touhé problem?
I mean, I think to the extent that Wasatch County has a desire to coordinate with Summit County, I think it very much is an issue of our two entities, making sure that we're aware of, you know, the issues that we're dealing with, land use decisions that we're making that affect each other. But as far as the access goes, you know, private property rights have access established. You know, what those rights are basically up to state code. And I don't know that Wasatch County necessarily has a role in every individual property owner's access rights. I think in general, though, Wasatch County wants to be a facilitator. We're working with Summit County to identify potential solutions. And I think that there is a path forward here for this project.
Yeah, so can Wasatch County compel Touhé to play nice? Perhaps could you stop issuing building permits until the two developers figure something out?
I mean, that's a complicated question, again, because as a land use authority, state code limits the types of actions that the county can take in certain circumstances. That's not something that we have talked about just yet. I know that there is a lot of interest in those parties coordinating with each other. And again, I think Wasatch County has a role as a facilitator, but where private property rights are involved, the county doesn't necessarily have the same ability, you know, to adjust what Touhé's property rights are any more than we do Wakara or others.
All right. Taking a look at tomorrow's Wasatch County Council agenda, there is consideration of adopting Ordinance 24-09 that would provide the imposition of modified impact fees for transportation facilities. So usually we see impact fees for water or sewer tie-ins. Is Wasatch County suggesting that all new development now pay into some sort of transportation facility?
Yeah, Wasatch County has actually always had, or at least for the last several decades, a transportation impact fee to pay for. This is countywide road infrastructure projects. So this is merely an update to that fee. So it's not an imposition of a new fee. Mm-hmm. Back in 2021, I believe we adopted adjusted fees to that. And since then, you know, there's been a lot of cost changes. So what this fee update reflects is changes in which projects are of this kind of countywide significance and what the costs of those projects are, so that we can make sure that new property owners who come in, new developments, that they pay their fair share to maintain the current service level of our transportation network. And that's to make sure that our existing property taxpayers don't pick up the burden that new growth causes on that transportation infrastructure.
Okay.
But it's also careful to balance that we aren't using this for things like maintenance or other things like that. Those are just basic responsibilities of the county. This is just additional construction when you have to widen a road or build a new road or make an intersection bigger due to the development of a project.
All right. So are you thinking like down the road, the money for the bypass road?
That is not one of the projects on our impact fee facilities plan, primarily because that's a state level project, but there will likely be a local participation. In the past, the county actually has instituted a corridor preservation fee and used some of the funds on this corridor, and those would be used probably as a local match. But what we're talking about here is road widening projects in places like the East Heber Valley, interchange or intersection improvements up in the Jordanelle Basin and other areas all around the county. So these are the lists of projects that are eligible to spend these impact fees on, and the council's considering setting the level of those fees, and that the study that we have provided basically sets the limit of they can be up to this high, and the council could choose to do something lower than that if they wanted to.
So how much are you talking about increasing them?
I believe it's a few hundred dollars. But it kind of depends on the way, so it's based on the number of trips that a project generates. Homes generate different amount of traffic than, say, a fast food restaurant than a grocery store does. So it's a little bit of an increase for those ones, but again, that's reflective of the cost of the projects that we're doing primarily.
All right. And kind of when I read this, I was thinking, oh, buses, because we've been talking so much about transit, but would this cover any transit facilities as well, or only roads for cars and trucks?
Yeah, we currently do not charge any impact fee, and I'm not aware of any entities that charge impact fees related to transit. We only charge it for our road infrastructure.
All right, and one more thing on tomorrow's agenda is a public hearing at 6 o'clock to consider a conditional use permit for a 10-foot concrete retaining wall in the Jordan Basin Overlay Zone. Is this for a home?
Yes, so this is a home that wants to build a retaining wall that is otherwise not the same as the other retaining walls. Normally, we're in the Jordan Basin Overlay Zone, it has higher development standards, requires things like rock walls, and this is a request to kind of modify that requirement.
Okay. Is it going over what's usually allowed in terms of height for a retaining wall?
No. We have kind of pretty firm limits on how the height of the walls and the required setbacks of those walls. If they grow higher than that, they have to be kind of stepped back into the hill. This is really just the material that makes up the wall is the request.
All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Not this morning.
All right. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
That's Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. In the studio now with an update from the Christian Center of Park City, I have the co-chair of Board of Directors from the Christian Center, Rob Harder. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Leslie.
So your new executive director arrives when?
October 1st. So coming very soon. In fact, we've got him involved with the staff summit a couple of weeks ago. He joined our director's meeting, so we're trying to get him as much as possible, thanks to Zoom, to still stay plugged in, get his face in front of the staff so they get to a little early transition to his transition to full-time.
Yeah, so have you kind of taken over some of the duties as the co-chair of the board of directors?
Technically not yet. I won't do that until October. Our board meeting will be in October, ironically. And so, yeah, so pretty much full-time executive director and just making sure they're, again, just handoff of things to Steve.
Okay. Jim and Susan Swartz are now currently board co-chairs. Is one of them stepping down?
Yeah, that's right. Jim is going to. He is going to stay on the board, but he'll step down as co-chair. I'll join Susan, so the two of us will be the co-chairs.
All right. And something I was noticing online, you now have a national advisory board. So what's that?
Yeah, absolutely. We did that a few years ago, and essentially it is getting advocates for the Christian Center, and most of them are, there's a few that are national, but mostly are state, but people that are lots of, you know, great networks, have opportunities where if we needed help with different things that we bump into, we can call them, and we can ask them for help or ask them for assistance or advice or guidance. So they don't have any governing power. They're not on the governing board of directors, but they are advisory board members, so they do provide great advisement, and we just have a wonderful advisory board. So, yeah, that's essentially what it is.
Yeah. Now, as co-chair, when that starts, you are then a paid that's a paid position for you as co-board chair. Are all of your board of directors paid?
That's a good question. So this is really unique. No, it's going to be kind of a unique situation because I'm going to have a dual role as a consultant paid, but also a board member. Most of the board members are just volunteer only. And so, yeah, my position's a bit unique. We have one other board member that's been paid over the time as a consultant, but I'll be the second one.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about that opening of the new store at the outlets. How's that going?
It's been so fun. It's been great. It's such a fun store. And yeah, we've had so many great comments about it. And I think a lot of people still don't know we're out there. They're like, wait, you have a store out in the outlets? I'm like, yeah, just go to the Nike store. It's just to the right of that. And but the people that go have loved it.
So is that a donated space or is that something you got to pay rent for?
We're paying rent for.
Yeah. And you needed to do that because you just had too much stuff?
Yes, Leslie, we've been looking for the last couple of years, actually. And, you know, we had the warehouse really was a nice relieving valve, so to speak, because we could put a lot of our stuff that we store there. But that's not a place where you can sell anything, let alone drop off things. It's not a drop off location. It's literally just a warehouse. So we still needed a retail space that was public facing. And this provides a great opportunity for that.
Okay, so this is kind of where your nicest things are. And because you're paying rent, you got to make some money on it. Huh?
That's right. You know, it's funny. People ask it all the time. Every store has some really nice items. The boutique still has really nice items. The Summit Exchange certainly does. I would say the Summit Exchange has more of that. And all of our rec gear, all of our skis, which are going to be coming up here soon in terms of special ski sale, they are going to land in Summit Exchange simply because we have the space.
All right. Let's see. The Christian Center just finished up its back-to-school program. We've got kids, of course, in day one at the Park City School District, South Summit School District. How did that go?
Really good. Yeah, I wanted to give a shout out to the community. That really is a community event in that we couldn't do it, Leslie, without the support of this community. We had about 1,350 kids registered from Summit and Wasatch Counties, our friends from the Goshute Tribe. And it was so fun. I was there for both days, and it was so great seeing these kids' smiles and the parents' smiles to be able to get new clothes to start the school year and then to have the school supplies they need and the backpack. It just was such a fun event. And again, thank you to the community for supporting us in that.
Yeah, so the community did that financially, or did they actually provide the backpacks and the school supplies?
A little bit of both. Mm. Yeah, some provided supplies. A lot of people financially supported us, and then some people dropped off backpacks. Some people actually put together backpacks and put a bunch of supplies in them. So it was a really fun response from the community.
Okay, and it's kind of harvest season. Is the mobile food pantry still going strong?
It is. So that has been unbelievable. We have seen a 20% increase across all of our food pantries in general, including our mobile food pantries. So yeah, I was at one last week. And up at Deer Mountain. And the Park City ones will wrap up this month, as I understand it. And then in September, we have more in Heber, and then we'll be done in September. So we're just going to go through September this year. Last year, we went to like mid-October, but we had more earlier in the summer, and it's been a fantastic experience and really a good response. We've seen a lot, again, 20% increase across the board with our food pantries.
All right, and coming up, we got to mention Hike for Hunger. This is always a fun day.
It really is, yeah. So a lot of you have gone. I know over the years, we've done it for many years now. We're back at the canyons, right at the base of where the band shell is, right where the gondola starts. So I encourage you to check it out September 14th. We've got some new elements to it. We've got food trucks there. We'll have live music, of course, great hiking trails. So we encourage you to come check it out. We also will let you know, it's all about food insecurity, to raise awareness around food insecurity. As I mentioned, we've seen a 20% increase so far this year. Last year, we saw a 20% increase. The international students haven't even come. That's typically when we see that spike in attendance to our food pantry. So the fact is, it's continuing to grow. And so just people still are surprised that that is a need here in this community. So come out for Hike for Hunger. It's a great day, and it's a great location.
Okay. People can find out more online.
That's correct.
All right. Rob, anything else?
That's it. Well, just thank you so much for always the shout-out, and look forward to having Steve Richardson here soon.
Yeah, and we'll probably be talking to him next time you come in.
We'll bring him
great.
On. Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
That's Rob Harder again, the executive director still and co-board chairman of Christian Center of Park City. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. 435-649-9004. We want to shout out again to Park City Mountain and the Epic Promise Foundation for being with us this morning. Thank you. We appreciate your time with us. We appreciate all of the 21 people who have called in this past hour. We sure would love to hear from four more of you. Again, you can go online at kpcw.org as well. Again, you've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City at 91.7, 88.1 FM in Summit County, 91.9 FM in Wasatch County. Again, big thank you to Epic Promise Foundation and Park City Mountain.